Three is a magic number. The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm.
The third time's a charm. The third time's a charm. Hello, and welcome to Third Time's a Charm, the show that takes an in-depth look at the third installment of a franchise. This is episode 31, Star Wars, episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. And I'm your host, once again, Darth Mike, the Dark Lord of the podcast. Welcome officially to the final year of Third Time's a Charm, which technically started March 3rd, so we're still a month early with that anniversary, but just a reminder, that does mean this show is ending next March 2021. But don't fret just yet, because we've got a lot of content before the end, such as this episode. Today, I'm joined once again by my Leaf brother, foodie Jedi Kyle Reinfried. Kyle was on the Return of the Jedi episode, and will eventually be on the Return of Skywalker show. What's fun about Star Wars is there are three part threes, because technically there are three trilogies, so I'm taking full advantage of this fuzzy math with this show, the second part three in the franchise, but the one that comes chronologically first. Now this episode, Kyle and I can't possibly cover everything going on in this super jam-packed CGI fest of a feature film, but we do touch upon what works best for us and what doesn't. Plus, we go a little bit into the prequel trilogy in general, as well as the expanded Star Wars universe at large. So without any further ado, grab a lightsaber, jump in a spaceship, and watch out for those clone troopers, because it's time for Revenge of the Sith. I am back here with my Leaf brother Kyle. Welcome back to Third Time's a Charm. How are you, man?
Good. What's going on? Good to be back.
It's been a while. I don't think you've been back here since the last Star Wars when we were talking Return of the Jedi, so...
I know. I haven't been back. It's you and Brian.
That's right. I sort of commandeered your co-host from P.S. I Love Hoffman for a few shows there. I hope you don't mind, but he's just so good at it.
Yeah, no, that's I love listening to him, so.
Well, we are here tonight. You know, this might not, I don't know. I'm interested tonight. We are here to talk about episode 3,
Revenge of the Sith.
Yes, episode 3 Revenge of Star Wars, episode 3 Revenge of the Sith. Now, you might be wondering, like, what's going on? We already talked about the third Star Wars movie, but this is the second third Star Wars movie.
And named number 3, so.
Yes, the one that is actually third in the series proper order. And we are on the verge of a third part 3 coming out soon with Rise of the Skywalker. So I thought it would just be fun that, you know, over the course of the show, we would talk about all of the third Star Wars movies, and I do it with my Leaf brother Kyle here, because there's really no one else I know around as knowledgeable about Star Wars as you.
Oh, you flatter me, Michael.
But it is true. It is true. So I guess to start off the show, I just want to know, what are your general feelings about the prequels? I'm not sure I know entirely how you feel about these movies. We don't really discuss them too much. So can you give me a little brief history about that?
Maybe that's like the thing right there. We don't discuss them much. But that doesn't mean I don't enjoy them. I actually, so you know, like as... I'm like, I won't say what, but there was another movie we were maybe going to talk or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But just recently, because I am a Disney Plus subscriber, I watched Revenge of the Sith out of the three prequel options. I just happened to choose to watch that one, not even thinking like in the near future we were going to be talking about it. So my history, 1999, Phantom Menace comes out. And I am in sixth grade, so however old you are then, 12, I guess? I don't know, something like that. I like it. You could say that I loved it because I was a kid.
Yeah.
And sure, was Jar Jar even then, like, this is a lot. Like, forget, you know, politically incorrect and
is
maybe some stuff.
Jar-jarring?
Like yeah, exactly. But... I don't know, there's a lot of great things in that first movie. I always kind of go back and forth on which is my least favorite of the prequels, but there's just some good things about the prequels, and I think the worst thing is probably, especially in Revenge of the Sith, they were doing blue screen for it, not green screen, because of like the most of the colors they're using, because there was a lot of green in it. I don't know. I just remember it being
blue
screens.
A lot of earth tones, a lot of greens, a lot of browns.
Yeah, greens. I love the earth tones. And we might be going back to Endor in Rise of Skywalker. So.
True, true.
But anyway, yeah, so definitely, especially because this one is the first movie ever to be shot fully digital. That's some fun facts for you right there. And so as far as like the look, like it's so overly CGI, but you know, the first one and even like the second one, they use some real locations. I actually even had been to one in Seville, Spain. Pardon Naboo is there. You know, he was going to Tunisia still.
Uh-huh. Yep.
You know, some real locations. I mean, we're getting an Obi-Wan TV show on Disney Plus. Like, by far, I'd say Ewan McGregor and the music of the prequels are the best things about the prequels.
Yeah.
So, I mean, as far as, like, in 1999, I remember... It's the first movie ever I saw multiple times in theaters. Because obviously, I mean, I was still a kid, so I really didn't have much of a choice beforehand, I guess so. So I saw it 3 times in theaters, episode 1.
Okay.
And then each movie from that, I've kind of... Every Star Wars movie that's come out, I've seen 3 times in theaters. That's kind of my lucky number, so 3rd time's a charm, yeah.
But then, so it sounds like you kind of like the prequels. Like, I mean, why don't we talk about them? Why are they sort of like, why do we put them in a closet on the top shelf and, like, you know, only bring them out once a year to sort of, when a new Star Wars movie comes out, to use as a comparative? When I look at these movies, it's like, oh, this is sort of out of control, overwhelming, over the top, like, the extreme, whereas, like, I like stuff like the new Mando series, which is like the antithesis, which is like pulling it all back, bare bones.
Yeah, back just to basics.
Back
yeah.
to basics kind of stuff. And I will agree that there's some fun here. I love Obi-Wan. I love Ewan McGregor. And I almost wish that we started with the second movie.
Yes.
You know, and that first movie was sort of never really existed, or at least just in part. Because it's very... The prequels for me just are very overwhelming. They're very long. They're not very engrossing. And there's just very few moments of, like, really great action mixed in there, which is really jarring sometimes. So what is it over time? Like, was it just that they got sort of, like, more over the top? Or is it just that over the years they sort of rubbed you the wrong way? Like, when did it become sort of, like, not as much fun?
Yeah, I think, I mean, you know, the older I got, again, since they were coming out when I was a kid, like, I mean, you know, that's, I was already a fan of the original trilogy, but even as much as I was a fan, I wasn't, lack of a better word, I'll call myself, like, a student of those films now, a Padawan, perhaps. You know, the older I got, the more, like, it was just like, yes, these are overly complicated, plus they just complicated, like, the continuity of a lot. Like, the good thing that you got going on, pretty much in, like, the successful franchises out there right now, which, let's just call it MCU and Star Wars, you have the kid fans, like the nerd fans, grown up, and they know everything, and they want to keep up with this continuity.
Mm-hmm.
And they're bringing fun little things back in. Like George Lucas, starting this, like, new prequel trilogy, he's just a more, like, I think he kind of lost his, like, inner kid. And although the first one does, you know, like... He reached to kids in the wrong way. He was like, you know, like that awesome bad guy from the first trilogy. Yes, he did have a redemption, but, like, let's show him as a kid and then as, like, a whiny teenager. And yes, Luke was whiny, but I don't know. There just needed to be something that separated, you know, I mean, Luke doesn't go bad. He becomes good. So maybe, like, I don't know, but you needed something different between Anakin and Luke. And then even Boba Fett, like, they end up making him, like, you know, he's not a Mandalorian. Then there's a whole clone army of him, and he keeps a clone for himself. And, like, we're going to see Boba Fett as a kid and, like, ah, gotcha.
Yeah.
And, like, doing just, like, really bad things in Attack of the Clones. And then this movie, I mean, the worst thing about Revenge of the Sith is the acting, and that comes from, well, maybe I should say the worst thing is the dialogue, but Star Wars movies never have that great a dialogue. And so besides Harrison Ford, like, in the end of the day, like, truly, like, becoming like creme de la creme of actors, you know, it's like Mark Hamill has had a fantastic career, the late Carrie Fisher had, you know, like, a great career, but like, in not like, I don't know, just like conquering the silver screen kind of way. So I'm not gonna say it's because the original trio is better actors, and obviously you have some great actors in this prequel trilogy. I mean, you got freaking Academy Award winner Natalie Portman, you've got Samuel L. Jackson, you have Liam Neeson, you have Ewan McGregor,
Hayden Christensen.
But yeah, well, even Hayden Christensen, what's that movie?
Shattered Glass. Yep.
Like, he's good in that.
I agree.
Zero chemistry between Natalie Portman and Hayden Christensen.
It's very difficult looking back and watching episode 3 for me this time, because everything is so stilted. Everything is so on the nose. Everything is just like hitting you over the head with a hammer. You know, I think of Natalie Portman's line where she's like, "So this is how liberty dies, with thunderous applause." And it's like, "Anakin, you're breaking my heart. I'm going to die." And it's like, you know, Obi-Wan being like,
"She's lost the will to live."
Yeah, but I mean, even lines as bad as, like, Obi-Wan being like, "Don't you see that he is the one who is the evil guy?" Like, you know, I'm just saying, like, they're doing, like, the script is pretty terrible. Like, it's doing a very disservice to these actors and stuff. So it's unfortunate. Like, I feel like you were saying a little earlier, where it's like, the visually, I think it's very appealing to all ages, not just children, but I think he's mostly trying to hook the kids visually. And then when everyone opens their mouth, it becomes like a movie for 60-year-olds, like George Lucas, where it's like, "Oh, the senator is in trouble and there's a mutiny," and it's like, "Wait, what?" These are not like children stories. That's, I think, part of the problem.
Yeah, Phantom Menace is about a trade embargo. Like, I don't
Yeah, and this is about a coup, basically.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we've definitely discussed this before, and I mean, you're just saying, like, maybe just get rid of the first one in general. I mean, there is that machete cut out there.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I mean, there's people that have even just trimmed down Phantom Menace into, like, a 45-minute kind of thing, like a prologue of sorts. I mean, yeah, like, I never wanted to see him as a kid, per se. I think there just should have been something, like, in the opening. They're just not utilizing these crawls anymore. Like, even, I mean, I'm not trying to get into the latest trilogy, but my biggest problem with The Last Jedi is I don't like that it starts off pretty much right after Force Awakens. That's just not something I like in my Star Wars movies.
Well, there's, like, no room for a crawl. It's, you know what I'm feeling? It felt like, what's the point of the crawl? Be like, we know where we are.
Yeah, like, utilize the crawl. Like, I mean, I don't know. It would have been similar, I guess, to the opening crawl of Empire Strikes Back, but they should have been, like, after the defeat against the, you know, against the First Order, whatever. But, like, point being, they should have utilized the crawl in these prequels and just been, like, there was always the myth of the Chosen One, and he was found, and his name is Anakin Skywalker. And then it's just, like, he, you know, raised by Obi-Wan, like, I mean, I like the character of Qui-Gon. I think he has some interesting things. Like, he's kind of like a hippie Jedi, which, like, mm-hmm. I'm into. But in the end, like, besides the great music and, like, you know, like, Duel of Fates, like, that whole last mm-hmm. lightsaber battle. I mean, the pod race is, I do like the pod race. That is a fun action sequence to me.
Yeah, I like that too. I mean, my favorite prequel is Attack of the Clones. I know people think that's insane.
Yeah, because of mostly because of the shitty Naboo scene of just, like, you know, that love stuff.
The sand it gets everywhere. I mean, that's the thing that I'm going to, like, every one of them has, like, enough, I guess, for me to say, like, well, it's not the worst. It could be a whole lot worse, I guess. Like, I find a lot of Part 2 charming. I don't know. I like all the Obi-Wan detective mystery kind of thing that they're trying to go for there.
Yeah, he goes to a diner. We go to a Star Wars diner.
To see Dexter Jetster.
Yeah, when, like, all the Jedi land on Geonosis. Like, and you get to see the Jedi in their numbers. That's like, oh, awesome. Like, this is what I've been, like, dreaming up as a kid in the heyday of the Republic and the Jedi Order. But yeah, with this one, I mean, it just ultimately, you know, I mean, it needs to have a tragic ending. But I think my last big thing I'll say about, like, just, I think he should have became, and this is something, again, I think we've talked about, he should have became Darth Vader at the end of episode 2.
Right, yeah. They needed the whole, this
like, not, whole not, movie. Not all full suit Darth Vader, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
It could have still been, like, a mystery. I don't have all the answers. All I know is in the middle one, when, like, all hope is supposed to be lost, that's a pretty good one for him to turn Darth Vader at that point.
Yeah, I know, like, my friends and I at the time were definitely expecting it to end on that cliffhanger where it's like, you are, I now dub the Darth Vader credits, but
yeah,
it was
exactly
the wedding instead.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, let's get into this movie real quick in a minute, but the last thing I just kind of want to say about why I think I have, like, issues with these prequels is because, you know, George Lucas did the whole thing that I think is referred to now as prequelitis, which you touched on a little earlier, where it's like, these aren't about where everyone came from, you know? It's not like the first set of Star Wars movies was setting up all this stuff.
No, the first movie starts by saying, this is chapter 4, this is episode 4.
That's what the crawls do. And I think, like, he used these movies instead of the crawls to do things like, here's where Boba Fett came from, here's where C-3PO came from, like, here's where the
Yes. This
came from. That prequelitis stuff kind of is what got in the way. If those characters were just kind of there, that's fine. But to be like, oh, here's this whole grand introduction, like R2-D2 meet the rest of the cast and crew and all this kind of shit, and it's just like, it's draining, especially when they keep doing it by like the second and third movie too, because I would have thought that like they'd have listened to some backlash or you know, kind of tried to go a different direction or maybe leaned back on the throttle a little bit. But judging by the way this movie opens, it's like full force. Like, they're going harder than ever with, like, how much crazy shit can we put on the screen? How tonally awkward can we make this battle? I mean, like, let's get into this movie and the opening battle sequence here. Like, as far as all the Star Wars battles go, like, how do you feel about this one when they're trying to rescue the Chancellor and they're fighting Count Dooku?
I think it's a cool opening. Like, I mean, again, not visually in the sense of how it actually looks because of the crappy green screen and CGI at this point. But as far as, like when they were storyboarding it, and, you know, like, there's always, like, ooh, I wonder how the Star Wars is going to open up. Like, what ship? Just the original with, you see one ship quickly pass over us, and then all of a sudden this ginormous one chasing after it. Like, you know, you can't beat that. But, you know, this one, it kind of is cool that all of a sudden we're, like, over Coruscant, and then we're just like following these ships, and then also this giant battle is revealed to underneath us. So that, you know, I mean, that's definitely kind of cool. Like, I think the opening credits, you know, it's just like we're in the thick of it now.
Yeah,
you know,
it's the war. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. This is now the Clone Wars. Well, to further prove what you're saying, like, this, everything, just like George Lucas was just like trying to flesh everything out in this movie. What was beautiful about the original is, like, we're getting Luke and Ben Kenobi, old Ben Kenobi, talking about stuff, and he's like, and they're saying the Clone Wars, and this is 1977, and they're talking about Clone Wars, and there's no internet, there's no Wikipedia for you to go on and certain, you know, there's no fan fiction, there's no nothing for you to find out what the Clone Wars is, but it's called the Clone Wars, and you're just like, oh shit, there's a war and there were clones involved. That sounds cool.
Mm-hmm.
We're finally getting to, like, see what the Clone Wars was.
Yeah.
And so we've got droids, we've got the Separatists, that is primarily a droid army, then we've got another one that's primarily clones, but then the generals are Jedi, it seems, for the most part.
Right. Yeah.
So we've got, after however many adventures, and we're getting to see them on this journey, which it just seems a little silly, although Anakin is supposed to be, like, the best pilot or whatever, which we never really, besides, I mean, as a kid, he blew up that Separatist.
Well, we saw him as a pod racer, and
yeah, the pod
I didn't
racer.
Watch most of it, but there's the whole Clone Wars television show, which I'm sure he does some amazing flying stuff and everything, too.
Yeah, but it just seems, I mean, there's just so much shit going on, like, you're almost, like, you're really threatening the lives of, like, two of your very important Jedi. Of course, we know that they're not going to die in this opening sequence.
No.
But still, it just seems like, kind of, like, a silly thing to do, and then they're just going after, we learn that there's this guy, General Grievous, who's, I absolutely do not like whatsoever. I have grievances with Grievous.
Like, what bothers me about this opening is that it sounds so clear-cut. It's like they fly into this big battle, and the concept is to board a ship, rescue the Chancellor, and basically get him back to the planet.
Dude, I read that the opening was originally, like, the opening battle, Palpatine Rescue, was ran over an hour long. Like, the original cut of this movie was 4 hours.
This is too much. It's taking too long. Like, I'm already checking out. Like, by the time we get to Palpatine, I'm like, cool, we're off the ship? It's like, no, we have to go face General Grievous. It's like, cool, we're off the ship? No, we have to crash land the ship on the planet. It just feels like it can't help itself in that it needs to get everything in. You know what I'm saying? Like, he can't exclude anything. I have issues, and then what ends up happening is we get to the Count Dooku fight and I'm cool again. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's what happens. It's like, I get angry, and then something really awesome and cool stuff happens, and it, like, brings me back to a level where I'm like, alright, I'll give this movie, like, another chance. And then it screws me again, and something cool happens. I'm like, alright, you know?
Yeah, no, it's very up and down, like, Richter scale. Like, just looking at, recording right now, I'm looking at my wave files. Like, that's what it is when I get into, you know, it's just going up and down with, like, my interest or even, like, my emotions. The last movie, for the most part, ended with Dooku versus Obi-Wan and Anakin, and let's just get back to that right away, like, or just show how amazing Anakin is as a pilot and just have, like, him and Obi-Wan. Anakin is flying, he's amazing, and he's just doing, like, you know, awesome pilot things, and gets him right onto, like, that General Grievous's main ship.
Okay, so that's, okay, you're nailing it, because, like, all this time, and they're not showing me how great Anakin is as compared to, and you know what I'm saying? Like, he's making poor choices, like, he's not listening to
Yeah, he's making, like, bold moves, but that doesn't make you great.
It doesn't show him kicking ass and being cool and being, like, the ultimate Jedi. It shows him they're just these two bumbling friends, like, yucking it up, like, just trying to, like, laugh their way through to the control ship.
He needs, which, I mean, you know, there does need to be fun, but you could still have fun, like, Obi-Wan totally, like, I don't like flying. Like, if he was saying that the whole time, and Anakin is just doing amazing moves and stuff like that in whatever, you know, two-person ship or even, like, a bigger ship.
Like Obi-Wan's cool when he's like, Sith Lords are a speciality. It's like, ooh, you're a badass motherfucker. Like, that's cool.
Yeah, Obi-Wan had some sass. Like,
right,
that's awesome.
Yeah. And even Anakin, when he's like, last time you might have kicked my ass, but this time I'm ready for you and all that. And I kind of quite like, even though it looks kind of wonky when Obi-Wan gets knocked out and everything, I quite like the what goes down between Dooku, Anakin, and the Chancellor here. Like, that's a very dark, very crazy moment in Star Wars, which I think helped earn its PG-13.
Sure, yeah, definitely decapitation. I mean, well, I guess it happened in Attack of the Clones, too.
But he slices both of his hands off, and he's, like, truly helpless and defenseless. It's not like, you know, when Jango Fett got his head cut off by Sam Jackson, he was, like, trying to kill him, like, shooting fire at him.
Yeah, which does confuse me as far as, like, okay, so in the end of the day, like, Darth Vader has, you know, no real limbs anymore, but, you know, like, we see him flexing his, like, robot hand, and that makes people choke, or obviously he does force pushes. Like, you know, Count Dooku, I understand he has the lightsabers on either side of his neck, but I'm just like, it's still interesting to me that, like, you know,
you need to make a wave of the hand to use the force kind of idea. Like, yeah, I hear you too. I was thinking the like same that. Thing this time. I was like, just because his hands are cut off, does that mean he can't, like, move stuff with his
mind? Yeah, maybe
mind?
Maybe no more lightning. I don't
now. Possibly.
This movie in the end, or this story, like, I think it should have happened in part two, but this movie is about an addict. Anakin is an addict, and hate is his addiction, like, fear, all the stuff that the Sith are known for.
Yeah.
And Obi-Wan is his sponsor. And when the sponsor isn't around, he dips into the stash. And, like, that's, like, what Anakin is doing, like, little by little. We even see him in Attack of the Clones, like, via his hate, via his mother's death. He kills all those sand people. And then, like, Palpatine knows because he's been, like, there's just sort of been even bit more Palpatine-Anakin stuff in these three episodes that, like, all of a sudden in episode three, it's just like, oh, they're buddy buddies now. And Anakin confides, like, stuff to him.
It's just so weird because I see, is it Ian McDiarmid? Is that his name?
Yeah, Ian McDiarmid, and he's one of the better things about this movie.
Yeah, he is so good, especially in this
one.
He's
having so much fun.
But his character, I was thinking about before, he's such like this, he's a predator, right? Like, he saw this little kid, he attached himself, he started telling him, feeding him all these ideas ever since he was a child, like, whispering in his ear, and I mean, it's like, you know, molding him and gassing him until, like, he was just like a paranoid person who couldn't trust anybody, especially his best friend. And that's what when we get down to the planet, that's kind of an interesting thing I didn't really kind of pay attention to in previous screenings, because I just wasn't interested, I guess. But now I'm just trying to figure out the dynamics between people. And it's like, yeah, Obi-Wan is telling him what he needs to hear, and Palpatine's telling him what he wants to hear, you know? And it's like, he knows he should listen to Obi-Wan, but if he listens to Palpatine, like, he'll live, he, you know, can potentially solve this problem, which is he is foreseen that his wife will die in childbirth. So, like, that is driving his whole fear kind of thing. But, like, I like that. I like the way you put it. It was like, he is an addict. It's very crazy.
Yeah, like, that's what it's become, and that's what they should have spent more time on. See, do we get an Attack of the Clones? Is there does Yoda have a reaction? Do they cut to a reaction of him when sand people are dying?
I'm not sure if it's then, possibly. Yeah, there's definitely a moment where he senses great fear. And
yeah, I think there is, like, you know, like an imbalance in the Force, just like how Obi-Wan felt it for Alderaan, and obviously when all the Jedi are getting killed in this one, we see Yoda drop his cane and everything like that.
Yeah.
And that's the one thing, I mean, you know, Yoda in Attack of the Clones becomes CGI because they decide that Yoda is going to be, you know, we're going to see him as a warrior and hopping around, which I don't necessarily have a problem with that, but it's just like, obviously now, like, they would have done a better job of puppetry mixed with, you know, just, I mean, like, Steven Spielberg got it right with, like, Jurassic Park. Like, he mixed the two together, like, for the most part, perfectly.
Personally, I think it's beneath Yoda to jump around like that with a lightsaber. So I just feel like he's way, he would have a different sort of method. I have very complex feelings about that when he starts jumping around and everything, because it just doesn't feel necessary. It makes him look and seem weaker than I was expecting. Like, I always thought he would just be more the kind of guy who would, like, float there with a force shield around him and, like, use his powers and just not need a lightsaber, or you couldn't just get near him. But I was a little surprised about how they sort of depowered Yoda in my mind.
In this one, when he's just like, an exile, I must go. It's just like, really?
At least it makes more sense when he's fighting Palpatine in this one than it did fighting Dooku. You know, like,
yeah, I mean, in Dooku, he only loses because Dooku knows that he, like, in the end, although Jedi aren't supposed to have, like, attachments, like, technically by Jedi code, like, Yoda even broke that then, because then he saved Anakin and Obi-Wan from, like, that big, whatever, beam or whatever falling on them. Like, he should have just gotten Dooku right then. That's what the Sith know, that the Jedi are gonna do the right thing, but, like,
it's weird, because, like, you don't even really need Yoda in these movies. Like, especially if you have a character like Sam Jackson, who feels like the stand-in for Yoda for most of this, where you have, like, this very quiet, strong presence, you know? And it's, like, a new presence, and this is a new thing, and he's barely in these things, too, and he ends up getting his ass kicked and, like, thrown out of a fucking window. I'm like, Sam Jackson's gonna get his ass kicked? That's, like, I just don't buy it.
Yeah, I remember reading, because this is, you know, still, like, the early days of the internet, and in the sense of, like, you know, now, like, we have, obviously, like, Wikipedia and everything like that, but, like, I remember, like, reading in, like, probably EW magazine when they did a feature on it, and it's like, Mace Windu is the greatest, like, warrior, while, like, Yoda is, he's the wise one, and then, like, Mace Windu is, like, the most, like, cunning warrior. They should have been a tag team of sorts or something
that'd
like
been cool.
That. I don't know, like, something like a yin-yang kind of thing, but yeah, like, that's what Mace Windu should have been, like, the warrior part of it. It just gets a little too much, and just to go back to this initial, you know, encounter, it is cool in the sense, like you said, like, once they start lightsaber dueling, like, that's neat, but, like, Obi-Wan kind of gets out of it, like, right away, and, like, injured, and then Anakin goes on, and once he cuts off the hands, then Palpatine goes, like, kill him, you know, it's just like, and that's that, but then they have this whole elevator escape routine after that, and then we meet Grievous for the first time, and it just
keeps going on and on. It's like the pieces are there, the players are there, but, like, they're just not in the right places necessarily. Like, you don't need to go right to Grievous then. Like, you're going to meet him, you're going to have plenty of him later when Obi-Wan Kenobi goes after him. You know, I mean, like, I don't understand why, I don't care right now. I need to get out of this sequence somehow.
I think they addressed it in the Clone Wars that, like, they showed why, like, he had, like, a cough or something like that, but, like, I don't necessarily know why, you know, Clone Wars, you know, cartoon came out afterwards. It's like, so why he had to have this, like, cough in this movie? And then it's just like, okay, I get it. He's, like, even a sicker version of Darth Vader in a way, in the sense of just like more machine than man now, or whatever kind of creature he is.
And I also think that they were trying to say, look, we have a fully CG character that doesn't look crappy, right? Like, because he's more of a robot kind of thing, like he actually looks like in place, even if you don't think he's cool looking, like he looks like, at least he looks like he's there, as opposed to, like, you know, the softer sort of more flesh-based alien characters they've tried to integrate. I think that was part of the deal, definitely, like, foreshadowing Vader, which I did not pick up on at all whatsoever as this was going on. All I was saying was, like, oh, it's a robot army, and he's a robot, and he runs the army, and that's the whole idea, and...
Yeah, it's like they needed, like, some kind of droid leader, then I guess he is more... I mean, he's got that heart that Obi-Wan shoots with such an uncivilized weapon. But just, like, those are moments I like that little moment. I like that little line, because it goes back to the original one and just saying, for a more civilized time.
So, my favorite part of this movie is sort of around, right before Obi-Wan goes off to, like, hunt down General Grievous, like, the... Palpatine takes Anakin into his quarters and he's like, I'm gonna, like, recommend you to be on the council. I need you to be my eyes and ears and, like, hook me up with all the kind of info going on about the war and what they're thinking and all this kind of stuff. And after that scene, he goes to see Obi-Wan, and Obi-Wan's like, the Jedi need you to spy on your friend Palpatine for us and let us know everything that's going on with him. And, like, we don't trust him. We know he doesn't trust us. I was like, that is the fucking bomb right there, because, like, I like that scene because it puts Anakin in that very precarious position, you know? Again, like, Obi-Wan's like, you must, like, be able to sense, like, something is wrong with this guy. And Anakin just, like, lies straight up to his face, and he's like, you're right, something's up. And, like, totally doesn't care whatsoever. It's like, I don't know, like, those moments don't seem like much, but, like, upon rewatching, that really jumped out at me. There's an ability here to be complex and emotional and almost, like, Shakespearean, I guess.
Yeah, well, no, that's definitely, I mean, they're going for a Shakespearean, like, Greek tragedy here. Like, that's definitely what this movie is. And even just, like, you're clearly drawing it towards the fall of the Roman Empire and going from, you know, democracy to, a, you know, even, like, you know, Republic to Caesar. Yeah, like, there are the bones here for, like, good stuff, but doesn't help that, I mean, it just in length, in poor dialogue, and then lack of direction to some, you know, some inexperienced actors. The role of Anakin was also up, I remember reading back in the day, Leonardo DiCaprio and James Vanderbeek were two.
I think it was a wise idea to look for someone new to play him, because you were going to surround him with so many known actors already. And that's something that, I don't know if that helped or hurt this, because that's something that the original trilogy didn't have to think about. They were all unknown.
I mean, you had your knowns in your, obviously.
Well, Alec Guinness, you know, but they weren't...
Alec Guinness and Peter Cushing.
They weren't big stars in America. They, you know, those guys were British horror and comedy guys. Like,
they were definitely, like, known in some pretty, like, you know, hit American movies, I think. I mean, at this point, like, you know, I mean, Natalie Portman isn't, like, a star.
When this movie's being made, yeah. Well, she had been a big child star. She had done, like, The Professional and Beautiful Girls. She had been in a bunch of stuff, but I hear what you're saying. This was sort of going to make her a more of a mainstream adult,
like, I mean,
actor.
The biggest name is probably Samuel Jackson, because even, like, you know, Ewan McGregor at this point, I mean, we have Shallow Grave and Trainspotting, but, you know.
You know what's weird about this movie, too, is that I can't get a handle, like, it keeps reminding me that time works differently depending on what planet you're on, because it seems like half the movie is Obi-Wan over wherever he is with the clone troopers fighting General Grievous, okay?
Yeah.
He's on, like, that world.
On Utapau,
Yeah, okay, so, and it's, like, all daytime there. And then the rest of the movie at the time, Anakin's on Coruscant going back and forth between the opera and the Chancellor and the Jedi Council and Padme, and it goes from, like, day to night, day to night, day to night. And so, like, it feels as if the battle is, like, over the course of one day on that planet, but Anakin is like living 3 days in the course of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm having trouble, but I kind of think that's it. I don't think it's intentional at all. I think it's just me trying to come to terms with like a lack of continuity or something like that, or just trying to figure out how long this is all happening over and everything. But like, up until Order 66 is executed, it's like this crazy like back and forth between Obi-Wan in a battle, Anakin like in a room talking to some guy in a chair. It's just the weirdest.
Yeah, that definitely doesn't help. But I guess they need to be, I mean, like, they needed to be separate, so we got, like, the, you know, Palpatine, Anakin stuff, because that's also, like, they really didn't show any of that in past movies.
And you know what, too, man? Like, Ian McDiarmid's so good as the Chancellor at this point as Palpatine when...
That opera scene is, like, my favorite scene.
The opera scene's really cool, and, like, it's really well directed, too, which makes me question if, like, Spielberg came in and directed that one day or something as a, you know? But, like, not only that, but when he reveals himself to Anakin and he's like, you know, I'm a Sith Lord, like, what are you gonna do? Like, arrest me or what? And Anakin kind of doesn't know what to do. There's just the way he plays it in both of those scenes, so non-threatening, so, like, this is the right way. So, I mean, he's just such a good actor. Like, I'm amazed at what he's able to do with some of these lines and some of the dialogue.
Yeah, he's chewing up this non-existent scenery. But no, like I said earlier, he's really having so much fun with it, which, because I think he gets to play, I mean, you know, obviously playing the bad guy, you know, actors always say is, like, more fun.
But he also gets to expand the lore and talk about cool Star Wars shit we want to hear. Like, this is the shit came for, you know?
Darth it's
like,
Plagueis,
I want to see how Darth Vader was influenced, like, what is the kind of stuff that he wanted to learn about? And we find out, oh, he's trying, like, in this one, we find out that, oh, Darth Plagueis might have been able to create life, but he might have also been able to keep people from dying, too. And it's like, all right, that is enough of a motive for me to turn to the dark side. You know what I'm saying? Like, that's good. And, like, that they try to explore some of that is nice, but, like, there's so much more. They can go so deeper if they just focus. You know what I mean? Like, if he just focused.
I don't know, there was too much stuff going on in the other two movies that by the time, like, this, they're like, oh shit, we have to get him to become, like, Darth Vader. Like, not just Darth Vader, but, like, in the suit.
Right.
You know.
Do you think that now that we have the shows and stuff, like, the Obi-Wan show is supposed to take place during this era, right? Like, with all the Clone War, the end of the Clone War thing. Do you think that maybe they might take more time to elaborate on this kind of stuff through those shows?
You know, not till now did I have the thought of, will they do some flashback stuff? And it would be very interesting if we got to see him and, like, Hayden Christensen have some conversations.
Do you think if they did a Darth Vader show, they'd use Hayden Christensen? Like, that would be pretty cool, right?
I mean, you know, he's in the suit.
Well, because he takes the suit off from, they would be able to do some stuff with the suit off, and you would see, oh, it's actually Hayden Christensen and stuff. But, like, you know, having Vader in Obi-Wan's show should probably happen, right? Like, we should check in on that. It's all happening sort of along the same time and everything.
Yeah, I mean, just even, there's been hints and there's been, like, theories that, you know, the next meeting of the two of them isn't on the Death Star, that there was, like, other stuff. But then also at the same time, I don't know how, like, I watched, like, all of the Cartoon Rebels show, and we get...
the Darth Maul encounter?
Yeah. Like, we get a, you know, Darth Maul who is brought back in the Clone Wars.
And in Solo, a Star Wars story.
And in Solo now, yes, in Solo. But we finally see... and I love it. It's such a perfect, quick...
it's like a samurai battle, right?
Yeah, exactly. And just shows, like, how at, like, peace Obi-Wan is. And just, he's been, like, studying and has come to terms with, like, everything for the most part in these 20 years on Tatooine. But, you know, yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of stuff in this Obi-Wan TV series. Like, people might be coming for Luke or something like that. Like, there might be these Inquisitors that we've met in the Star Wars Rebels series. Or, I don't know, some things maybe, like, in the early stages he is helping start the rebellion, but they realize, like, oh no, the rebellion is going to be sought out because Darth Vader senses you, like, stuff like that. I mean, The Mandalorian's 8 episodes, so at most this Obi-Wan show is going to be 8 episodes. For some reason I have a thought in my head, I heard that 6 episodes. I don't know.
You could have Jimmy Smits come back, that's for sure.
Yeah, exactly. Jimmy Smits, I mean, he made a cameo in Rogue One. I think Liam Neeson, I think he's going to talk with Liam Neeson. Because that's what's hinted at the end of this movie, is that his old master Qui-Gon has learned ways. The whole Force Ghost thing, which is a huge part of Star Wars now, is just a throwaway line at the end of this movie.
Of all the things, though, that's what bugs me. Like, of all the things that he's going to just sort of gloss over, it's going to be, like, creating Force Ghosts. It should have been bigger than meeting C-3PO without his skin on, you know what I'm saying? Like, we got more service paid to that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, in this world where he becomes Darth Vader at the end of episode 2, my episode 3 would have had, when shit hits the fan, like, there should have been, like, we need to have a backup plan. Or, like, Yoda in the end, all of a sudden Obi-Wan walks in and Yoda is talking with other fallen Jedi, including Qui-Gon or something like that. I don't know.
They had no reason to believe that they were being screwed over at all whatsoever. Like, the Jedi just kind of were like, yep, this is exactly how it is. There's no ulterior motive to any of this kind of stuff.
I mean, it's the arrogance of the Jedi that is their, like, downfall. Just as the Jedi have their Jedi mind tricks, like the Sith shroud in secrecy and kind of create, like, a, you know, cloudiness that doesn't help the Jedi see. And obviously, like, Yoda has visions and stuff like that, but these visions don't always seem to be true. But obviously then Anakin has visions of Padme dying, and then we find out in the end it's because of him, you know, it's the old catch-22, and then, I mean, obviously, then we get that horrible, no!
Oh, yeah, we're gonna get to the no. I want to talk about the moment when Anakin turns, because it's one of the times when the movie just turns it on really hard, and, like, shit just happens left and right, and, like, so Sam Jackson goes to arrest Palpatine with, like, 3 or 4 high-ranking
Jedi. Yes, 4 of them total, 2 of them fall right away.
Yeah, what I love is Sam Jackson's like, I'm here to arrest you. And Palpatine's like, oh yeah, I'm a Sith Lord. And, like, they just start fighting.
I am the Senate.
It's just like, boom, like, they're into it. And then the fight is, like, in such a small, closed-in, awkward place. It's like in his office. It's just so weird.
It's in his boardroom.
Like, they couldn't have waited until he was, like, leaving for the day and like...
It's in his tower. It's absolutely tremendous.
They should have, like, accosted him outside of the his Senate building and had a big fight on the steps.
Yeah, or found out he had a secret Sith temple, like, worship room in there, something crazy and tall ceilings, cathedral-like.
Sam Jackson's about to kill this guy, and he's using the Force lightning on him, and it's, like, backfiring, and that's what's turning him old and ugly, which I just thought he was, like, 1,000 years old.
Which is bullshit, because unless through vanity or whatever reason, he then does that to his helpers. If you look in Return of the Jedi, his, like, hand servants look the same as, like they're supposed to be another species.
When that started happening to him, I thought that was like, oh, he had like a facade or something that he used the Force to like make himself look one way, and this is how he's actually revealing himself to as the way he really looks or something. But originally I just thought like, oh, in Return of the Jedi, I was like, oh, he's like 1,000 or whatever, like he's just super old.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Anakin comes in and just straight up fucking shafts Sam Jackson, like chops off his arm, and then Sam Jackson gets lightninged out the window and everything, and that's how he becomes Darth Vader? Like, okay.
Yeah, but then right away falls on his knees. What have I done? It sounds like such a Mel Brooks line, like, the 15, the 10 commandments, like, what?
My bigger issue is, I don't feel it.
I can't live without her.
Like, it would be one thing I feel like if him and Sam Jackson, like, threw down, but he sucker punches him, and like that, it's just like, you just have to display the instinct, I guess, or something, where it's like, the intent, basically, like, from then on, you know that he is the dark side because he reacts without thinking, and he acts through anger and fear.
He needed Palpatine to tell him to chop off Dooku's head, but now this one, besides Palpatine manipulating him and like, Anakin, help me, I'm dying! Like, besides, like, that, his skin melting and teeth rotting while, you know, because of, I guess, the dark side energy. You know, but Anakin makes that, like, decision on his own. But then even right away, he's like, it shouldn't have been like, what have I done? It's just like, right away, you just should have then seen, like, those yellow Sith eyes or something like that, and which he doesn't even have right away, but then he kind of does when he does like a little look to the camera,
and then he
when
doesn't
he's about to kill
and
the
then
separatists.
He does,
yeah, then he
and...
doesn't. Yeah, exactly.
It's weird because like by him saying that, you feel like, oh, he has remorse and regret, and like he shouldn't be Darth Vader yet. He should have just been like, good, like now that that's over, what's next? Like, who do you want me to kill next? And then the Emperor would be like, go slaughter all the kids, and he'd be like, word, and just take off and do that instead of being like,
yeah,
crying,
yeah,
about it.
Exactly. Like, I mean, there still could have been a little bit of empathy in the sense that, like, we do see that he loves Padme, and he's like saying to her, like, we can rule the galaxy together.
Well, that's what he's doing it for. Yeah. Well,
yeah, exactly. Because then we get that speech later on
in Empire.
Does he say it? No.
Well, he tries to convince Luke, because in this one, he's like, you and I, like, I'm going to take the Emperor out. It's going to be you and me, Padme. And then in Empire, he's like, Luke, like, it's going to be you and me, dude. Like, I'm going to take out the Emperor.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, exactly. So you could still have, like, a little bit, like, seeing, like, I guess, Padme, and then before, like, Obi-Wan finds out and stuff like that. And then, you know, it can still be, obviously, very tough, you know, for Obi-Wan and him saying kind of the same stuff, like, but you were my brother and that kind of thing. But, like, it's all stuff that just feels rushed at the end of this.
See, that's the thing, is like, now we're getting what we all came for. He's Darth Vader, he's gonna do some devil shit, and he's gonna fight Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? Like, that's the next thing we need to see.
This needed to be the end of episode 2. Like, this scene right here needed to be at the moment of the same thing, you know, like, yes, okay, people's hands would have been getting chopped off, but people's hands get chopped, or limbs get chopped off in every movie now, and even, like, event, like, every Marvel movie makes sure that happens too, somehow.
Something that's, like, super crazy, though, is, like, when we get to Order 66,
yeah,
that means that there's a chance that Obi-Wan Kenobi is going to be murdered before he even gets a chance to fight Anakin. You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, that is so strange, because we know that's not going to happen, so why even put him in that type of peril? I remember sitting there, and I was like, I was having a pretty good time watching this in theaters. It was, like, you know, one of those midnight screenings the night it came out. I was there with a friend, we were having a good time, and then this Order 66 shit happens, and I was like, I was having so much trouble, like, comprehending what was about to go down. And it's like, not that I don't think it's interesting that there was, like, this turn where all the clone troopers turned on the generals and killed all the Jedi. It's not like I don't think that's cool that there was, like, a mutiny of some kind. It's just that they were programmed into the clones from the beginning, and that the Emperor had, like, some kind of secret kill switch, and it was so jarring. I still can't really reconcile it exactly in Star Wars. It's hard.
Yeah, it's fleshed out a bit more in Star Wars Rebels.
Okay.
And we get to see some older clone troopers, and they have a bit of, like, yeah, you know, like, they figured out that they had chips in them. But yeah, it's never really, like, even, it's not said in these movies. But to go back to my original thing of saying, like, you hear about the Clone Wars in the original movie and you don't know what that is, like, that stuff is fine, but when you have, like, a big plot point, you can't do that. You need to have some other kind of allusion towards that, in, like, show that when they're on, what's the water planet that the clones come from?
Kamino,
yeah. But, I mean, supposedly even when the original one was coming out, when they were watching cuts, they're like, oh, what's going on? I mean, this happens for so many movies, and then you put the score to it, the soundtrack, and it ties it all together. Like, at least with the Order 66 part, like, the piece of music, that track is really good, and I like listening to it, and it has, I think, like, a good emotional resonance
for the murder montage.
Yeah, for the murder montage. But then it does get, like, so you're like, oh wait, okay, the clones are just flipping like that, because we don't know that there's, like, chips in their heads,
right?
You know, you have to, I guess, then you have to use your imagination, you assume something, but, you know, but then, yeah, you get, like, the youngling, like, Master Skywalker, what's happening, you know, just like, and then you just see,
so yeah, the siege of the Jedi Temple is, like, epic, and, like, that should have been that, like, if you want to flesh out a 20-minute battle,
that should have been the opening for this movie.
Right, it's a good call, exactly.
You want a big, crazy opening?
Because we saw that, like, really, I don't want to say boring battle with the big lizard thing that Obi-Wan's riding, but, like, this battle would have been way better, like, to see a bunch of Jedi getting, like, taken out by all the clone troopers and everything, and then Anakin, like, opening the door and seeing, like, oh yeah, he's definitely gonna, like, kill at least 6 or 7, like, little kids. Like, that's messed up for Star Wars. Like, that is dark.
And then the Emperor does turn on the Separatists, like, they were just pawns in his plan as well, but it should have been, like, all of a sudden, like, a droid clone army team up to take down the Jedi.
That would have been interesting too, and it could have waited until he made his Senate address, right? Like, he makes the Senate address, and then everything is sort of binded in legislation or whatever you want to call it. He has immediate power, and he can just be like, okay, so now the Jedi are the traitors, and so everyone after them. And then instead of an Order 66, it's just a hunt and kill kind of massacre kind of thing. You know what I'm saying? It's just,
yeah.
You understand why a clone trooper would just sort of suddenly turn around and either, like, kill or arrest, like, the commanding Jedi officer or whatever.
Yeah, and then even right then, that would have been good to have Anakin standing by his side. Like, it would have been like Mace Windu, you know, of the Jedi Council came with his goons to kill me, and luckily enough, we have hero Anakin Skywalker, because he has become something of, like, a legend in this war. Like, people do know his name. So, Star Warrior saves the Chancellor.
Do you know, there's apparently, I didn't watch him, and I don't think I've ever seen him, but there's somewhere on my original DVD, there's, like, a lot of deleted footage of the rebellion sparking. So, like, Padme and Jimmy Smits and, like, their friends and stuff. There's, like, a bunch of scenes with them on Coruscant, like, meeting secretly, like, saying, like, shit is terrible, like, we need a backup plan, like, I'm pregnant, like, something needs to go down.
Fun fact about that, there was a scene with Mon Mothma, and then they ended up using the same actress to play Mon Mothma in Rogue One. But even, like, I mean, Jimmy Smits, like, you know you're gonna be getting to, like, Alderaan and Princess Leia going there, like, he should have been in, like, more of these prequel movies.
We're almost at the end here. Why don't we close this out and talk about Mustafar? You mentioned earlier, like, Anakin gets sent there. His eyes start glowing when he murders all of the Separatist leaders. You got the droid army leader. You got those guys from the banking guild. You got basically all the bad aliens, right? You got the guys from the very first movie, from, like, the first scene of episode one on the blockade ship. And then Padme shows up, trying to plead with Anakin, and Obi-Wan stowed away, and Anakin jumps to, like, super conclusion when he's like, you're together, and Padme's like, no, you moron, like, I love you, and Anakin chokes his pregnant wife out.
At this point, yeah, exactly. I mean, the Sith, the anger, the fear, like, everything's, you know, like,
in order to redeem himself, he better, like, I don't know, sacrifice himself for his son one day or something.
Yeah,
it's gonna take that. But we get, I mean, this is the moment I've been waiting for this moment for, like, half my life up until this point, the battle between Darth Vader and Obi-Wan Kenobi, but I seriously never expected, I don't know why, I just didn't expect him not to be in his armor for this battle. Like, I understand, like, this is why he gets his armor, but my mind at the time was like, where's his helmet? Like, where's his cape?
Yeah, like, that slash, I mean, I guess it's, yeah, once he's then in the suit, then he gets his red lightsaber, but that's, again, what should have been, like, if he became Darth Vader at the end of that one. Imagine episode 3, I said it should have been began with, like, the battle at the Jedi Temple or whatever. But imagine if this movie just started out with, like, just seeing, like, the red kyber crystal and, like, him making his lightsaber, and then that glows.
It's very weird that he doesn't have a red lightsaber already at this point.
Yeah, I mean, well, and that's because it's rushed, and so in the sense of he had no time after going to the temple and then going to Mustafar.
See, like, I even feel like if you're going to have a scene where the Emperor's like, I dub the Darth Vader, you hand him his new lightsaber and say, now you are Sith, and, like, you have red lightsaber, like, go forth, my son, like, that whole thing. So the fact that Obi-Wan doesn't even have, like, a green lightsaber, they're both using blue, hurts my eyes a little bit. As cool as this is, man, again, it's just too much. Like, I mean, I know they cut it back and forth between the Yoda fight with the Emperor, and, like, it's just fun by virtue of how ridiculous it looks. Like, you got, like, this crazy old albino guy and, like, this tiny little green old man, like, kicking the shit out of each other. It's kind of fun for that. And then when we're cutting back to Anakin and Obi-Wan, I'm exhausted.
Yeah, it's, like, the opposite of their fight on the Death Star. It's kind of made fun of as, like, old man versus, like, robot, and we had, like, Alec Guinness and then, like, David Prowse, who's just, you know, clunky big guy in, like, this plastic suit, and how it just wasn't really, like, it was, like, hitting one another with broomsticks. It's like, let's amp this up. And it just gets so crazy to even at one point they're just swinging and not contacting one another. And again, the thing that, like, saves it for me in this movie is, like, the brief bits of dialogue, because I do believe Ewan McGregor when he's like, you were my brother, Anakin, you know, and that kind of stuff. And then the music. Again, the music is what saves it for me. I get we don't have a lava planet and we're not getting, like, this has to be CGI. It just gets too ridiculous. There's no reason that, like, they needed to hit that board and and then, like, all of a sudden the reactor goes and stuff like that. They just needed to be battling on, like, a lava planet, and then eventually, like, he does the cocky move of, I mean, this is where all of us learned if you have the high ground, you know, like, that's it. That's, you know, there's certain movies that you learn things about battle, like, you know, The Patriot, I learned aim small, miss small. While I'm aiming, I will be on the high ground, and no one will be able to defeat me.
I just feel like it's very awkwardly staged there at the end for such, like, an important historical moment in Star Wars lore. Anakin and Obi-Wan wind up floating on these, like, little mechanical devices in the lava, and then, like, that's what he, like, it's just a little weird. It's just very weird to watch for me, but yeah. I love it conceptually. I just wish it was toned down way more, because I lose the emotion. Like, I lose the passion. Like, it just, it becomes so cookie cutter and so, like, almost Matrix. It's just like every other kung fu thing that I've seen, instead of, like, emotional Star Wars battle or something from the heart. It's also extremely brutal at the end when Obi-Wan is not fucking around. Like, he commits and he handicaps Anakin. He cuts off both arms, the remaining arm and his other two legs.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy in, like, the swipe. He's just like, I'll leave the robotic arm. And then he, like, leaves him there. And this is the one point of Hayden Christensen acting slash, like, over the top, like, spit is coming out of his mouth, and he, like, his eyes are all bulging because, like, of cutting off of the limbs. Like,
I hate you stuff. Called.
Yeah, when he starts going, I hate you, that's the one moment that I'm like, oh shit, like, that to me, I liked slash I was a fan of.
They finally get there. They get there in the very last minute.
This is the hate we needed to see, like, coming out of him, which the moments where it does happen, it's so quick and over with, or that cut away from him massacring the Sand People in Attack of the Clones.
I think they did well with, like, Kylo Ren, is when they showed him having his hissy fits, right? Like, we needed more of that stuff with Anakin, where it was just like, we're out of milk? We're out of milk? Like, motherfucking, we're out of milk? And then he just, like, punches a droid, like, through the fucking wall or something.
Well, yeah, or using the Force to crush shit.
Or just using it more frivolously in general to make his life easier.
Oh, yeah, just, I mean, even, like, I mean, while it's a romantic scene, he floats that apple and, like, cuts it and gives it to Padme in Attack of the Clones.
Imagine other, like, Force abilities during coitus. Hey now.
Yeah, exactly. But that's, like, the kind of shit, and it almost needs to be, like, reprimanded, but, like, while the war is going on, they have to have every soldier they can. So, like, there could have been, like, those kind of excuses versus...
Or just the idea that he's in such a small circle, and he's more of, like, oh, there's General Skywalker or whatever. Like, no one really knows him personally, right? Except for, like, a couple people, and the people that do are really worried about him.
Yeah, I mean, he has a secret baby and secret relationship with Padme. Yeah, exactly.
He didn't even tell his best friend. He didn't even tell... his emperor or whatever. Like, everyone figured it out, but, like, yeah, he's a secret keeper. Like, the only one that he trusts is Padme, and then by the end of this, he doesn't really trust her. He's too paranoid.
Yeah, which, again, they show, like, in this film, like, the paranoia, and just, like, him, like, they say, we're gonna grant you a seat on this council, but not the, you know, rank of master. He's like, what? There just needed to be more of that through these films, and you get that by using those crawls and explaining certain things to us and being like, there's the greatest Jedi, quite possibly, is now part of the Jedi Order, and his name is Anakin Skywalker, and he's being trained specifically by Obi-Wan, who's already, like, a master on the council, and Yoda is even overseeing it, because they need this, because we are in the time of, like, war and shrouded, and we know the Sith are coming back. In the end of the day, one of the biggest things I hope that they do, I would love, since, like, Disney owns it, I would love for them to take, like, the negatives, and I would love for them to go back and just, like, fix the CGI of these movies.
I don't think they will to these. I think that the special editions have been tooled with too much for people to accept anymore. I mean, they already went back and they fixed Yoda from Phantom Menace, right? Well, not fixed, but they replaced the puppet.
Made him, yeah, exactly. They were like, let's just make them all three of them will be digital now. That puppet did look weird, though.
Oh, yeah.
Like, they're like, we need to make him a little younger, but it's like, okay, 20 years younger, he doesn't need to look, like, crazy different.
There's only one or two more scenes of interest here that we really need to talk about. The first one, of course, is Darth Vader getting his armor and his limbs and everything put on, the big Frankenstein scene, cross-cut with the other major scene of Luke and Leia being born.
Yeah, supposedly there's a Darth Vader comics going out right now, like a series. I guess it'll become like, you know, they'll put them together and it'll be like one solid graphic novel or something like that. But I read an article recently. I didn't read the comic. I don't even know where you go to buy comics anymore. Supposedly in this Darth Vader series, they go into much more like his internal like monologue of what he's thinking when the mask is going on. Supposedly it just makes the scene that much better, like once you read that and you understand what he's thinking. But in this scene, like, we get crappy, like, they're not even using real makeup, we get crappy burnt like Hayden Christensen, like CGI Hayden Christensen.
The one thing I love is that the Emperor doesn't lie to him. As far as the Emperor knows, he's telling him the truth about Padme, right? Where he's like, what happened to Padme? It's really weird to hear James Earl Jones say Padme, but the Emperor's like, oh, in your anger you choked her and she died. And that is exactly what happened. He's not lying.
Yeah, exactly. That's how it's at least played. Like, I don't know how Palpatine actually came to think that, because obviously they have the funeral for her, so then it's like known in the Senate that like Padme is dead, but it's not like it's known and said that like she and Anakin were, you know,
was foreseen.
Yeah. I mean, Darth Vader doesn't even say, I guess when he says, like, when it's like, you killed her, he's like, you know, like, if you think Padme would have been weird, if it's like, imagine if then you heard James Earl Jones goes, and the baby? Like, you know, like, but he doesn't ask about, like, the potential, you
That's
know.
That's true. He doesn't ask about the kids at all.
Yeah. Then do get a cool moment when he, like I said, he starts, like, crushing all that shit and he, like,
shows
pulls off
power.
It. But then we get that no that then they also now have in Return of the Jedi.
Yeah. So that was shocking when I first saw this. I was like, we're at the end of the movie here. I'm ready to go home. Like, finally got Darth Vader in his armor. Like, all right, it's like, it's 2 hours too late, but whatever, here we are. Then he has to scream that. That is just terrible. Do you not think it's terrible? It's okay.
I don't like it, but like, I get what they're going for, because it's the same. It's like Luke has that no in Empire. So I get what they're going for, and obviously you need to have some kind of like, it's just the wrong no. Like, maybe he shouldn't have said the word no. Or maybe that's the wrong kind of no. Or it's just also very weird to see Darth Vader have such a visceral, verbal reaction.
Right. I think you're right. I think if he had just screamed and not verbalized anything, it would have played a hell of a lot better. But the fact that he literally picked the word no and is like,
yeah,
you know, stretching it out. And if he was just like, rah, rah.
Yeah, exactly. Just raw noises are like, no, no, no. And just like, and then crushed it. Like, but just the long no.
And then we end with Obi-Wan. Well, we have Jimmy Smits taking Leia.
Yeah, because they always wanted a girl that, you know, he and his wife can't have kids.
Which is a whole other Marvel Disney Plus miniseries coming
I would
soon.
Love more Jimmy Smits, and that's why I do hope that he is in the Obi-Wan thing. I was very happy to see him in Rogue One. So
growing up, Alderaan. Alderaan places.
Alderaan places, exactly.
We actually end on the shot. I forgot we ended on the shot of Obi-Wan handing Luke over to his aunt and uncle. I totally forgot that that's the last shot of the movie on the double sons.
We get the great, is that like Luke's theme?
I think it's just
title. Is it
done? You know, it's like the dual son Tatooine theme.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
He's, like,
that
longing.
Theme comes back, and we get Uncle Owen and Aunt Veru standing there, you know, holding baby Luke and looking off into the sunset, like we get to see Luke do.
Yeah, man. Wow. There's a lot going on in these prequels, and each of them, they're so dense and so packed with so much.
I mean, look at, they're just trying to wrap up everything so much when they're on that moon when Padme is giving birth, and then, you know, Jimmy Smits, you know, says, like, all right, Captain Antilles, like, these droids are yours, and just, like, wipe the protocol droid's mind, but it's just like, but keep R2-D2s? Why not wipe both of them? Because, you know what? Again, like, when Obi-Wan sees R2, I know there's, like, multiple types of droids out there, but then wouldn't R2 whistle and be like, Obi-Wan, remember, it's me. Like, I've known you for 40 years now.
It is crazy, because it almost feels like at the very end here, they're like, oh, shit, we got 10 minutes left. What else we got to do? By the way...
We need to put him in the suit. Padme needs to die. Twins need to be born, need to separate to each planet.
You know how they're like on that medical asteroid or whatever, and it's like, someone wants to dock their ship here, the Millennium Falcon?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, that's what the Wookiees feel like in this. It does feel like, why are they here again? It's like, because they were supposed to be in Return of the Jedi. It's like, yeah, but they don't fit at all. Like, they're just here to be here. And unfortunately, that's how, to me, a lot of those prequels feel. They're just there to be there. There's not much, like, real guts or real story to sort of hold on to. And what's there isn't necessarily told, like, coherently. So it's a struggle for me to watch these movies from time to time.
George Lucas just forgot the fundamentals. Like, it doesn't need to be the carbon copy, because then we see that with Force Awakens, and I do enjoy Force Awakens, but obviously, like, it just, JJ had a really tough job. Like, people were out of touch with Star Wars in the sense of they had a bad taste in their mouth from the prequels, and then, like, what route do you do? And I think he did a very, you know, a very good job with Force Awakens, but it was a little bit too much, like, of a carbon copy of the original.
A carbon frozen copy.
Gonna take you in cold or warm?
I gotta thank you again from the bottom of my heart, Leaf Brother Kyle. Thank you again for joining me to talk about all things Star Wars. Where can listeners of Third Time's a Charm find you if they gotta get more of Kyle Reinfried? How can they check you out?
Yeah, so guys, I am part of two shows on the Cage Club Podcast Network. I have my own show. It's called Foodie Films, and that's where I discuss, it's kind of two different episodes that I have. I have ones that I highlight food-centric movies, and then I have episodes called First Cuts. So those episodes, I have people that have had success in the food and drink industry. So those are really fun episodes. And but we still always make time. I ask them what their favorite films are. And I always try to find some food and drink scenes from some of their favorite films. Then, like I said, I have the regular episodes. And then I am now on P.S. I Love Hoffman was the first podcast I ever had. And that was with Brian Rodriguez, the unofficial co-host, I think, of Third Time's a Charm by now. And boy, that's going to be, how old is that going to be? I know we started releasing in March, I guess like 3 years ago? Yeah, just about. So we took a note from you and Joey, and we started doing, it's going to be a year completed of P.S. I Still Love Hoffman, where we have the Hoff fans vote on, we give them two options, and they vote for what movie they want us to watch, and we do kind of like a DVD commentary, so that's fun. So yeah, check, if you like my voice, check out those podcasts, and you can always find me on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. I'm Foodie Films Media on those. Yeah, so, and obviously, you know, it's just really easy. You guys made it really easy on the Cage Club website. You just go on there, all the great podcasts we have on there, and you can find us pretty easy on that format.
Well, I guess until next time, Kyle, may the Force be with you. That's going to do it for this episode of Third Time's a Charm. Gotta thank Kyle. Be sure to check out Foodie Films, P.S. I Love Hoffman, P.S. I Still Love Hoffman. Also wanted to mention, if you go to YouTube, check out Star Wars The Third Gathers, Backstroke of the West HD. It's like a bootleg version of Star Wars Episode 3 that contains hilariously poor Chinese to English translated subtitles. Fridays are for fun. Every Friday, check out Tom Tom Club, the Tom Hanks and Tom Cruise podcast hosted by Joey and myself. We alternate Toms every Friday with Hanks for the Memories and Cruise Club as we cover the extensive filmographies of those two Toms. Go to cageclub.me for all the back episodes of this show, as well as access to all 26 shows on the network. Go explore and have fun. Go to Cage Club Pod on Twitter and Instagram to get all kinds of updates on what's happening on the network at all times. Write to me at 3@cageclub.me. That's going to do it for this episode. So until next time.
3, that's a magic number. Yes, 3. It is. It's the magic number. 3 makes the baby, and that's a magic number.
What does it all mean?